something's always going to go wrong with your launch. Just accept that. And it's so true. Like, how many times, like, you're smiling now because you know, because we
every
like,
single time.
Every time there's something, and it's either it could be a bigger thing or a smaller thing or a medium-sized thing, but something's going to go wrong.
Hey, I'm Cody Bernard, and you're listening to Getting to Market, the show that gives you an inside look into what it takes to successfully bring a new product to market. In each episode, we'll chat with go-to-market leaders about their tools, tactics, and tricks using real-life examples so you can take your own product launches to the next level. My guest today is Dan Murphy, Director of Marketing at Privy. Today's episode is brought to you by theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. This is the product launch course for product marketers that need help transforming their launches into their CEO's favorite marketing weapon. It was created by my former colleague and today's guest, Dan Murphy. Dan ran product marketing at Drift and currently runs brand and product marketing at Privy. Over 150 product marketers have taken the course and learned Dan's proven framework. You can check out their reviews of the course at theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. Now, the course normally costs $99, but because you're a listener of Getting to Market, you can use the promo code GETTINGTOMARKET to get this course for only $59. All one word, all caps. Again, that code is GETTINGTOMARKET, all one word, all caps. Visit theproductlaunchmasterclass.com right now to get this course. So with that, let's get into today's interview. I'm here with Dan Murphy, Director of Marketing at Privy. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Cody. Excited to be here.
Same. We have quite the backstory, you and I, which is why I was super excited for you to sign on as a guest.
Yes, I'm honored to be among, I think I'm supposed to be among the first five guests, the first five episodes, guaranteed slot in the first five, which is pretty exciting. And obviously this is a topic I care a lot about. And it's also something that like I learned the most about product launches working with you, right? For two years or something like that. Like, so this is fun. This should be a really good episode. Hopefully everyone takes a lot from it.
Yeah. So just to give listeners backstory, Dan was my boss at Drift. He was director of product marketing, and I was brought on initially to basically add more structure around the launch process, take it over from Dan. Dan shifted gears a little bit to focus on some of the demand gen items that the company had going on, and then worked his way back into product marketing, and him and I helped craft the go-to-market engine for Drift.
The other way to frame this is I was leading product marketing, had no idea what product marketing should be. And then because I was there, you know, they said, Dan, figure out product marketing and we will let you hire someone that knows product marketing. And that was you, because you had spent probably what, 5 years doing product marketing before you came to Drift. And so you actually came on and yes, you know, I was leading the team, but you taught me probably more about product marketing than any other person I've worked with so far in my career.
Being way too nice on that.
Not at all.
It scares a little bit. So what has changed in your life now that you've started working at Privy? What's your role? What do you do there? What are you responsible for?
So I lead brand and product marketing at Privy. And it's been amazing to do both, because at an earlier stage company, Drift obviously is a bigger company now, several products, several different sales motions. Leading both brand and product marketing at a smaller company. We do have two products, but we are smaller and earlier stage, has been awesome, because the way I like to think about it, like I could say, yes, I run brand and product marketing at Privy, but the other way to think about it is like my job is to help position the product story for growth so we can actually grow revenue and then also increase brand awareness at the same time. So having both those levers and thinking about them on a weekly basis, I think it's been pretty successful for us at Privy, and I just absolutely love the role.
Yeah. So actually product launches kind of help speak to the brand side, right? Like that is
totally
one of the biggest things that
totally
you can help get your awareness out.
Yeah. A huge, factor in growth, in the early days at Drift was having monthly launches and being able to go to market and build this community of early customers and champions and be able to bring them something new every single month. And so we're doing it a little bit different at Privy, where we have a lot of like brand-led launches as well. Like we're actually just finished writing a book, and we launched that last month after we launched Privy Email, which is something we launched in August. So it's actually kind of, we're doing both motions of like brand-led launches and then product-led launches. But yeah, 100%. It's a huge factor for growing brand awareness is these launches. And I just feel like I just feel like launches are such an untapped potential overall with startup marketing teams. Sometimes I think it gets too focused on just what we built and what is new and like a new feature or brand new product, whatever. And it's like telling just that story when like there's a full company, product, brand story probably to tell for like why you're building this new thing, why you're launching it, and what customers are going to get out of it.
How does it fit back into the DNA of the company? Because like obviously the company is built to solve some sort of problem. So on that end, what is Privy? What do you guys do, and where did Privy Email fall into that?
Yeah, sure. So Privy, we're the number one rated sales app for Shopify users. Basically, if you don't know Shopify, it's a $127 billion market cap company. Actually, it might be more. That was like, I keep using that line, but that line's probably like 3 weeks old, and their stock has been absolutely taking off for the last couple of months. So it's probably like $150 billion market cap company at this point. Basically, Shopify helps people build, you build your e-commerce store on Shopify. You can build out, it's pretty easy to do. And the amazing thing about Shopify and their growth over the last couple of years is that it's helped a lot of small e-commerce brands grow. Basically, anyone anywhere now can start an e-commerce store, which is great. It's e-commerce is a great equalizer because anyone around the world can do this, right? You don't need a loan or a retail space or a ton of money to get started. You can build your own D2C brand using dropshipping for next to nothing. But because of this explosion, and there's so many stores out there, and there's so many different areas, clothing, healthcare, skincare, food and beverage, right? There's a lot more competition out there, and it's harder, and everyone's running ads. It's like the line we like to use is it's easier than ever to build an online store. It's harder than ever to grow it, right? Because like there's so much competition, there's so many people running ads. So we actually help on the growth end. We have two different products, Privy Convert, Privy Email. Privy Convert is on-site displays, helps you like grow your email list and help people, you know, convince people to buy more products with displays, pop-ups, flyouts, you know, announcement bars on the website. And then we have Privy Email, which is relatively new, and that's our email marketing product. And so that does stuff like cart abandonment. So if someone abandons their cart, sends them an automatic sequence, kind of bringing them back, sending email newsletters, your typical email marketing stuff as well.
Before we actually hit record, you brought up there's a few different types of launches that you can kind of undergo as a company. First being obviously product launch, brand new, another being something around maybe a category launch. And then you mentioned competitor type of launch. Where did Privy Email fall into this, and what was kind of your go-to-market strategy for that?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, there are, I don't want to give like the definitive four types of launches because I know there's a lot of different talk out there, but there's a couple, you mentioned a few of them. One of them is absolutely you could do a competitive product launch, right? Where really what you're trying to do is you're trying to reposition your competitor or some sort of incumbent with your product. And that's exactly what we did with Privy Email. We've had this product for a little while. We've actually had 7,000 customers using it. It's a, you know, it's been a high growth company. We launched a high growth product. We launched it last year. But a strategic goal this year for us at Privy was to grow this product line, and we were seeing a lot of success, and we were actually uniquely positioned because we have such a deep integration with Shopify. We were uniquely positioned against all other email products that a small e-commerce brand would be using. We had such a tight integration with Shopify. The story was actually really compelling. It was, you know, we have the best integration with Shopify, and the number one competitive tool in that space for us, for small e-commerce brands, was MailChimp. And so the story we actually really led with for our launch in August on Privy Email was really like, if you're using MailChimp, you're missing out, right? Because MailChimp doesn't actually integrate with Shopify anymore. So we simplified it, and we focus 100% on if you're using MailChimp, you're missing out, because we knew, you know, we had the data to say this is, you know, a big piece of our audience and it's worth focusing on. And then we just focus on like really tight, simple messaging about why you would want to use, you know, Privy Email instead of MailChimp. And that was our launch. So that would be in what I would label, as you referenced, a competitive product launch.
So I agree with that. And it's like, it's a competitive launch if you want to give it a name, but you're still solving a huge problem. Like you were solving a problem and it was an integration with some sort of email tool, right?
Yeah, 100%. It wouldn't have worked if there wasn't people raising their hand saying, hey, we have a problem. We need this fixed. That's just a good, it wasn't just me certainly, but like, that's just a good product marketer's job. It's like understanding what those customer pain points are, especially in the market. If you're building a new product, you have a reason to build it, right? You think you can do it better than another competitor. You think you have a unique, you know, attribute about whatever you're building that would, you know, defeat a competitor. So we knew this was a problem that specifically small e-commerce brands were trying to solve. And so we knew, you know, once we built it, like it wasn't, and this is something that happens a lot too, it wasn't like, when it came to you know, think about this launch, it wasn't like we had to like come up with some complex story, right? And this is often something that product marketers will do. They'll try to like add complexity to it and be like, oh, we got to tell this elaborate story about why and blah, 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 and all these customer stories. It's like, no, this is so simple. Like we just need to be like, the biggest thing there was just be disciplined with our message and make sure we're saying it again and again and make sure everything we have, every launch asset, every sales rep, every CSM knows this is the messaging. It's simple. We're better than this competitor because we have this integration, which allows you to do X, Y, and Z. Boom. That's our story. That's our launch.
So just to take it back a little bit before that entire process of getting everybody, you know, aligned around the same message and everything like that, how did you initiate your go-to-market? Like, what did the process look like for putting that together? Like, obviously you guys said there's a problem in the market. We're going to go solve that. Mm-hmm. What was the forcing function to say, hey, we're going to go do this now? And how did you go and build that into your go-to-market plan?
Yeah. So we had basically invested a ton of engineering hours in building out this product, a relatively new product. And email marketing is like, you really can't win in email marketing in any industry unless you invest and build out a ton of features for that product. Like you can't have a lightweight email product or email marketing product. It just won't work because there's so much complexity. There's deliverability or delivery rate. There's, you know, special features people are accustomed to. Marketers use email marketing more than anything else. So they become, you know, accustomed to having really, you know, great tools. So we basically spent, from an engineering standpoint, a lot of time building up this product, adding a lot of features that would help, again, really solve around this problem of like, it integrates with this product, Shopify. We can help them, customers that are using Shopify, and we can help them do email marketing better. So we had been investing a lot of time from an engineering standpoint in the product. And then it came to like, all right, we don't have this like single thing that we added, like feature, or it's not a brand new product, but we know we need to launch this. We know, you know, just the marketing machine we've been building at Privy, we know we have this opportunity. We can build momentum if we plan a launch. So this launch wasn't, oh, the engineering team finished, you know, this thing, so now we're ready to launch. This launch was marketing led for the most part, with having engineering built a ton of things and added a ton of value to the product. Be like, you know what? We need to launch this. We need to go out there. And I think in some of our, this is a, maybe a little bit of a slip up of like our messaging. I think some of our messaging was like Privy email 2.0, right? And like, that was a little bit of a mistake on my part. I should have been more focused on just the competitive story, but like, we're trying to tell like, this is the 2.0 version of our product. But like, we didn't need to do that, right? We just needed to focus on the main story, which is telling our market that we have a better, superior email marketing tool now. And so essentially that's what we did. So we planned it. We just said, hey, August, you know, that's the right time to do it. And then we planned, you know, some momentum around it. We had a bunch of success after the fact of things we wanted to happen happened. And we had a lot of, you know, growth lead acquisition for that product. So it was perfect. So that was just a good example, just to call it out, right? That was a good example of like, you don't have to have something brand new and have engineering say, okay, it's going to be done on August 1st. So we can launch it on August 3rd or whatever, right? Like sometimes marketing can lead that momentum and say, hey, we're going to relaunch this thing. That's going to help us build momentum. We're going to reposition it. And then we're going to include all this stuff that engineering's been building over the last couple of months.
And I'm assuming you guys had some customers using it. So it was to a point where it was battle tested. It was put out into the market.
Yeah.
I mean, to like achieve totally what you were promising.
Yep. We had social proof. I mean, there's, you know, our, in the span of a year, we had about 7,000 customers using it, which is awesome. That's a great growth. And we hadn't really put a lot of marketing behind it. It speaks to the need in the market, right? 7,000 customers discovered this product on their own, installed it and started using it and getting success from it without having a lot of marketing behind it, right? So that was also a good signal that this was worth putting more marketing behind it. But we also had some great stats, like, you know, cart abandonment is a huge issue for small e-commerce merchants. And if you can go and set up cart abandonment and get people to come back and buy, you are missing out. Like you can basically get a bunch of free money if you don't have it set up, right? Like money you would have lost if you didn't set up this cart abandonment. And we have it uniquely positioned. Our 7,000 customers, not all of them were using this particular feature, but for a big chunk of them, they're using cart abandonment. They saved $18 million worth of sales, or they won back, $18 million worth of sales just by setting up the sequence, which, by the way, is set and forget. You go in, you set it up, you write your emails. It's just email automation. It's simple. There's nothing that complex about it. It does all the integration, like picks the product, takes the product image, sends it to people. Hey, this is the product you left. Sends them back to the store, puts it in their cart so they can just finish the process. That stuff's all automated. All you got to do is write the email. That's $18 million from amongst our customers that they would have lost if they didn't have that feature, right? So the other part of the launch, which was great, was that we had a bunch of social proof already built into it, which did make, you know, the launch much more successful.
Right. So quickly, take me back to that point where you just mentioned that you made a little bit of a slip up in regards to naming. I think naming is one of those things within product marketing that's like, you should name everything, right? Like if you're going to launch something, you name it. Like there's a reason behind that. And it's a way for you to build momentum and get, you know, something out into the market that people are going to talk about, or at least want to talk about. What led you to use Privy Email 2.0 versus maybe something, you know, with a little bit more vanity around it?
I started using 2.0 because this is another classic mistake that I've made over my product launches. I know you've made this mistake too. We've talked about it before. Like
yes.
when you write your messaging and your positioning for your launch, like it might evolve a little bit and you might get better as you get closer to planning a launch and you might have realizations about how to improve it, but don't start like rewriting it differently in different places, right? Like, so like your launch video, your blog post, your email, those messages, those headlines, those names, they have to be consistent. Whatever, what your team is tweeting and posting on LinkedIn about has to be consistent with what's in the email or the advertisement or the landing page or the announcement bar on your website, right? And it's so easy because actually, I think I tweeted this yesterday, like creativity isn't a winning marketing strategy. Consistency is, and it's so true for launches. If you're consistent about your message, you have your message, you have your headline, you know what you're focused on, just use it again and again. Like I talk about this in the product launch course I launched. And it's so easy to like have this, like it feels wrong. It feels counterintuitive to like say the same thing again and again. And especially like when you're planning a launch, like you're weeks out and you just keep saying the same message or keep doing the same training with your internal team again and again and again. And it's like, no, I should change it up. I'm sick of saying this, but it's like, don't. Be consistent. Make sure through the process and through your launch, this is the message. Because what you want is you want your audience to see that same message again and again and again, and they're going to get it. Repetition builds, you know, builds that processing system so that, you know, people will actually understand what the value is. So that was a mistake. And then, so I basically, the story was basically, you know, MailChimp isn't the right integration if you're using Shopify. Privy is, and here's why. And I just kind of used Privy Email 2.0, like a couple times in a couple of different places. I don't remember exactly where. And it was like, cause I was kind of caught between this thing where it's like, I was trying to share with, there was two parts to this launch. There was tell existing customers, the 7,000 customers, hey, we built a bunch of new stuff to Privy Email. If you haven't seen it or you don't know about it yet, because not everyone's just going to sign in and see this all the time. Here's the stuff we added, right? And so like those people, I kind of wanted to know, like, it's a 2.0, we revamped it for you, it's better, right? And then I was also caught between that and then the other audience for the product launch was net new people that didn't know about Privy Email yet, that we wanted to go out, they're using Shopify, MailChimp, and we want to bring them into our world, right? And so that's telling the competitive story. And so this is why I also like, it's tough with launches, and we've talked about this too, which is like, do you have one launch goal? Do you have two? Like in this launch, I decided to do two, and that's where like the cross, you know, messaging overlap between saying this Privy 2.0 to existing customers, and we're better than MailChimp to like net new customers, and that's where we had that overlap.
Yeah, I think it's okay to have multiple launch goals. I mean, you talked about like having consistency in your messaging and you need that and you need to like beat that down as much as possible. Like when you're actually going to market, like even, I mean, pre and post launch, but you can have two goals, even they're not always going to be aligned or they're not going to be the same thing, but at the same time, you can achieve both. I think like, as long as your underlying message is something that you're going to be consistent with in the market, like it's going to help you achieve that.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of like also splitting up, like when you're writing your launch plan, right? Like what activities are you putting together that drive towards which, as long as you know, the CS team, I'm focused on getting an existing customer. So here's the assets for them. Here's what their story is. They're getting existing customers up to speed with this new thing. And then, you know, for new customers, hey, the sales team, the message is a little bit different. As long as you can organize it right, and you know which goal you're pointing towards with each of your activities in your launch plan, then you'll be okay. You know, I was listening to a podcast this morning with someone talking about product launches, and she's like, something's always going to go wrong with your launch. Just accept that. And it's so true. Like how many times, like you're smiling now because you know, because we've
every
like,
single time,
every time there's something, and it's either, it could be a bigger thing or a smaller thing or a medium sized thing, but something's going to go wrong. Right. And so that was like the small, I'd say that's a small medium thing that went wrong. It wasn't a big deal. I just kind of noticed it and definitely made note of it after the launch.
Product launches, it's all about minimizing those mistakes that will inevitably happen. But I think if you get to a point where like you're doing any sort of like after action report, you can write that down and that should be the focal point of your next launch, right? It's like, hey, last time I messed up on this. Great. I'm going to make sure that that does not happen again, but something else is going to go wrong. I mean, it's going to happen.
And what I could have done there with those two different audiences, could have made two different launches, right? Like not everything, like I wanted to build this big brand momentum. This is part of, you know, wearing two hats, brand and product marketer. Like I wanted to have this one day where like the whole team's excited and we're talking about it. We build a bunch of buzz and that worked. It was great. I mean, it was really awesome. I was so pumped. It was one of my more successful launches to date. It wasn't just mine. It was the team. I don't want to take too much credit because we have a killer team that did a great job with it. But
shout out Connor.
One that I've been involved with. Yeah, shout out Connor. one that I've been involved with that I just felt was like, this went off really well. But the other strategy could have been like, you know what, we're going to make this a different launch for customers. It's not going to be a big splashy social media campaign. This is going to be a highly targeted email marketing training. You know, we'll work closely with the CS team and get them informed of how to tell existing customers. Or maybe it's not CS team. Maybe it's, you know, we do it one to many. We have a bunch of customers that aren't managed accounts. Maybe we just do a different strategy and we do it a different day. And that would be one way to avoid it, make it two different launches.
Yeah. Let's talk about something that you just mentioned, internal marketing.
Yeah.
What was your strategy there? And I mean, this is one of the most important things in any launch, right? Like I talked about this with Chris on the last episode, and it was, if you can't get your internal team psyched about what you're actually bringing to market, how are you going to get your customers? And exactly. What was your approach there?
Yeah. So like, first of all, internal marketing, I've said this before, maybe it's controversial, maybe it's not. I'm sure you'll agree with it, is if you spend majority of your time as a product marketer doing internal marketing, you're doing your launch well. Like you're doing the right thing. If you're spending the bulk of your time actually doing the internal marketing side of launch prep, you're doing the right thing, because that's actually going to have a huge impact. Like you just said, getting your sales team psyched about how this is going to make them more money, getting your CS team about how this is going to keep sales, you know, their customers engaged and excited and using in the product. So like, yeah, 100%. It's so important. And I also like to describe it like, it's more of an attitude than it is like a set of activities. Cause like if I were like, Cody, give me the, you know, five activities you do for internal marketing, you'd be like, all right, 1, 2, 3, 4. But then you're like, when you explain them, it's like, that doesn't sound very time consuming, but it is, right? Because you're having all these one-on-one conversations. You're doing all this, you know, one-off base, jumping on customer calls. You're doing all these email exchange conversations. Like there's all this stuff that actually builds up. So it's just like having the attitude that like, no, it's worth me spending extra time getting that sales leader excited about this launch, because that's going to get his team excited, and that's going to get them to want to go talk about this thing, share it, send it out to their customers, their prospects, and book meetings, right? So it's more of an attitude in terms of like my playbook and stuff that I do. So like with this launch, it was a lot of telling the story over and over again and making sure it was super clear to everyone. Like, guys, this is a simple story. We're not overcomplicating this one. Like I went to our management team meeting and I explained it and I pitched it all to them. Here's what we're doing. We did a takeover of our internal weekly meeting for the whole company. Connor on our team did this whole thing. He organized everybody. We had people come in and like product team demo the product. We had, you know, the marketing team present the messaging for it. Then we had the CS team talk about three customer stories of like seeing success with Privy Email and explaining how they did and what they were seeing and like looking at logos and actual screenshots of the dashboard. And then we had the sales team talk about how they, you know, won deals from MailChimp and how they converted them to Privy Email. Doing all of that, right? And taking over a whole 1 hour meeting for the whole company. I mean, we're 60 people, we're not huge, but that's, you know, a lot of people's time. And then that was like the Friday before the launch, which was on a Tuesday, right? So like getting everybody psyched up about it, making it super clear why, and like that is worth doing. And that was like, that's something that I think for any big launch that we're doing in the future, I highly recommend, like take over the company show and tell or weekly meeting, whatever you call it, and get everybody psyched about it and show all examples and bring everybody involved. It's not just marketing saying, this is what we're doing, we're excited, blah, blah, blah. Get everybody involved and talk about, you know, why this thing is so exciting.
How do you balance that? Like taking over a meeting, I think that makes a ton of sense, but how do you balance that when you're looking to train people like on the sales and CS side? Like, for example, I'm assuming, how do we get salespeople off the phones for 30 minutes just to quickly, you know, take a look at what we're going to be bringing to market or what we're launching? Or how do you get them excited to a point where they want to listen, right? Like they want to hear what you have to say.
So I'm not in favor of doing live training with sales or CS. I'm much more in favor of recording a video of me explaining it and then sending that with a quiz so that you get people to like buy in and confirm that they pick up the messaging. The quiz isn't complicated. The quiz is simple, right? And the training should be pretty simple. It should be like 5 to 10 minutes, because really, like, so first of all, the reason I don't like live training is because what always happens is you set up a, you know, hey sales leader, hey VP of sales, I want to do this training on this thing we have. Like, great, come to our monthly meeting. You're going to be the fifth person of 12 of five departments presenting. The sales team has 1 hour to take up all this information that five departments are going to give them, and then they're not going to retain it, and then it's going to be in the middle of, you know, so it's just not as effective. So what I like is setting a video. Nowadays it's just a lot easier because, you know, we're all remote. Send a video, 5 to 10 minutes. I have a framework of what I put in that training, and the quiz is really simple too. It's really the quiz. The goal of the quiz is just to like confirm, okay, yes, I understand what we're launching. I understand why it's important. Great. And it takes them total, hopefully nowhere more than 15 minutes between the video and the quiz. If that would be 12 minutes, right? Quiz should be dead simple, right? And that's it. Like that's the way to get people to retain information. Like I've been doing that for a while, and I just know because I would go into Gong. I've used Gong for a couple companies now, and being able to listen to those reps after they've been quizzed, like what they're talking about, what the positioning that they're using on calls to customers. And when you do the quiz, the video plus quiz, that just works better. They retain the information, they know what to say, and it's like, all right, check, great. We're effective with this training process.
And if you've done your internal marketing well, like you are going to see that translate back into, you know, views of the training and then how they look and communicate that back to customers on calls.
100%, 100%. And remember, like that, the whole idea of internal marketing is like people are hearing it again and again. Like you're over communicating. It's not like they hear it just one time from this video, right? And then they do the quiz. Like that shouldn't be the only time the sales team hears about something that you're launching. If it's a big launch, if it's something that they should hear about, right? They should be hearing about it a bunch of times in preparation for that launch.
Outside of the video and the quiz that you send them, what type of assets do you arm them with for more of the go-to-market side?
So it depends. There's definitely like nowadays, there's definitely a preference among sales people to like have a landing page with all the information on it that they can send around versus just like a one page PDF that like, I don't know, you and I have explored this before. We don't really know how to measure that. There's really expensive sales enablement tools out there, right? That like can help you see, and we've taken those demos, we've seen those tools, but like that'll like help you see like how many times was this PDF shared and like, was it part of a winning open op or a closed op or blah, like cool. But like, I think the preference I've seen a lot more salespeople is like a landing page that they can use to like walk someone through on a call or send to someone, or just they can consume themselves and like understand what's going on. Like there's outside of like, that's why you do the training as well, right? Which is like the training should be behind the scenes stuff. It's the positioning and everything. But if it's something that's gonna make your sales team more money, like the training video should be super, super freaking clear that, you know, this is gonna make them more money and how it's gonna make them more money. But the landing page is the full story. And I think it also works for internal, external audiences. I try to like stay away from those assets as much, because I just feel like it's probably better served to spend my time and put all that messaging on a landing page. But I know there's definitely like some use cases for using that stuff, especially bigger, you know, enterprise sales motions. Some of that stuff makes more sense.
Yeah. I've always felt like the best assets are the ones where the salesperson doesn't have to explain it to the prospect. Like to your point, like they can just send over a landing page or even a one pager if that's their preferred, you know, communication method. I think as long as the prospect is going to understand exactly what the story is, what the pain is, what the value is of that product, then that's all you really need to do, because that's going to spark the conversation back with the rep anyways.
100%. And like, and I think probably in an area where I haven't done product marketing is like in enterprise sales motions, where it's like you have to like customize the asset based on where you are in the buying process, because it's a 6 month or 12 month buying process, and you just need to add much more levels of complexity. That's a whole other world that I'm not an expert on, so I don't know, but I can imagine some of that behind the scenes assets. And then you do have to add context, and there's probably more training. You probably can't just do one video and a quiz. But I would say when you're a smaller, you know, organization, I don't know how many employees or whatever, like smaller, you know, your team is easier to manage, and you know everyone in your sales team. Let's put it that way. You know the names of everyone in your sales team, and you've corresponded with them. It's a lot easier to send a video and a quiz and get feedback that way, or get them, you know, tuned in and aware of everything, but then, you know, also, you know, make sure they get feedback about their own positioning.
Yeah. I mean, it also helps if you have a product that's super niche and it solves kind of one problem, or it just targets one persona within an industry. It makes it a lot easier. But I mean, look at the MarTech landscape, like 7,000 vendors, 8,000 vendors, right? Like there's so much overlap between departments and functions and tools that you kind of do need a little bit of differentiation in your assets just to speak to the right person, because otherwise somebody who might come under you and to say like, hey, we do actually have that. Here's how it's purpose built for you. And you know, that might land better with a prospect. But I agree. I think there's like the sense of like, you can offer general content as long as it actually lands with the prospect.
Yes.
So I think that all kind of funnels back to how you position the product. What is your approach to positioning? And then what was the strategy for Privy Email?
Yeah, so positioning approach, the first one, which I'll just teach here, which I think is really important, and it's like the high level thing, is like with a launch, there's three components. There's the name, the headline, and the story, right? And I call it the NHS framework, very simple abbreviation. It's not really, I could add some more marketing flair to that, I guess, but let's just keep it simple, right? NHS, name, headline, story. Those are the most important assets to figure out with your positioning. There's a whole bunch of ways of doing that. My process that I like the most is I don't use positioning docs. We use positioning docs together a lot. I've since graduated positioning docs and moved into decks because I think it helps me better formulate that story. And then what I do is like I work on, you know, I do my research, I figure out the pains and map the solutions, I do that stuff. And then when I'm ready, like I jot down the story, like a couple of paragraphs in like a Google Doc, or maybe I handwrite it out, whatever. Like, this is the story. And then I take that and I convert it into a deck where I like, I'm basically pretending I'm going to present it to. Usually I actually, this is interesting. Usually I the first position deck is this, I'm presenting it to like my management team or like my CEO or like my boss or something. And then I'll do it that way. So like it has some of that internal context about the positioning, because usually you want to set that up and you want to rationalize in your own head, like, this is why we're positioning it this way. But I do it no bullets, like no slides with like bullets or like long things of text. It's got to be screenshots, limited text. Like basically it's headlines and screenshots explaining what it is, or maybe it's like a little tagline, right? And then in the notes of it, basically I'm coming up with a pitch deck for what we're doing. And then what I do is I start recording videos. I'm going to plug Drift Video. I use Drift Video. I'm a Drift Video user. And I use that. I don't know. I honestly, God, I think I've made 1,000 Drift Videos this year. I use it for everything, but that's beside the point. I use Drift Video and I'll do like probably like 8 or 10 of those. And every time I record myself and I'm going through, I'm like, no, that's wrong. Let me go back. Let me fix this thing. That headline's wrong. I shouldn't use this image. Or, oh, what if I talk about this thing or get a screenshot of that article, blah, blah. And then I just keep doing that and recording myself, because when you record yourself, you're forcing yourself to like perfect it and make it good, because you want to be able to take that recording and send it off to your CEO. So you're forcing yourself to make it good. That I found has been the best process for coming up with positioning.
Like, you also get to a point where you realize like, oh, is this something that's actually going to make sense when somebody hears it?
Yes.
Like, I think one thing that I think Dave did an incredibly good job at hammering home with me is speak how you would to a friend. And that goes as far down the line of creating sales decks to positioning to whatever you're doing from a marketing perspective. It should all be incredibly easy to understand.
100%. I often pitch to my fiance, I pitch like stories. Like I'll give her like the context of like, hey, like, so we're talking about MailChimp customers and like MailChimp is this and this, like some basic, but then I'll just like tell her the story. And just like, she's a smart human being. She doesn't do marketing. She's a nurse, so she's not even close to marketing. But like, she's a smart human being. If she can understand it, if I just give her some basic context clues, like she understands like why I'm framing it, and then I give her the pitch, like, and she gets it. Okay, great. If she doesn't, and she gets like confused on something, or she doesn't, you know, she gives me feedback, then I can go make that adjustment, right? So that's a good way of doing it. Just find someone that, you know, you can just give them a little bit of context, and then, as you just said, it's a story to a friend. It's not anything more complex than that.
For the internal positioning piece, I completely agree with like the format of how to deliver or craft the message being a deck. It's so much easier to do that, like walking through a presentation from slide to slide, using, you know, positioning builds and all of that within your messaging. I do feel that there is value for positioning docs. And I think like from a template standpoint, I mean, I'm sure there's a million out there, and I'm sure that everyone kind of has their own. But where I feel like it does add value a little bit is more context for the people who might need that across your team. Now, if you have a team that's on the smaller side where you are all working towards the same goal, I think it's a lot easier. But if you have like a more complex organization where you have multiple products, multiple personas, multiple industries, et cetera, the additional context is needed more for like the marketing team than anything. Because I think with sales and CS, you do want to make sure like that they all are, you know, communicating the same message, in which case a pitch deck would be like the ultimate way to be able to do that.
Yes, 100%. It is a lot easier for me to go build out a pitch story deck and send videos around and just make it simple for our team than it would be at a company like Drift, where it's like there's different sales motions, different products, you know, several different departments, there's overlap, there's all this stuff, right, to figure out. I would actually be interested in this podcast with the guests that you interview, like finding someone that like is on that, you know, more enterprise level, even bigger than Drift, you know, thousands of employees, probably many different products, maybe a whole product line. I'd be interested in like, you know, what do they do here and how do they use, I'm sure they use positioning docs, but I'd be super interested in like finding out a little bit more about how they do that and what types of docs and what information they're using.
Same. I think, and that's the reason why I'm doing this. I think like ultimately I'm trying to figure out, I mean, at every company, it's going to be different. At every company, they're going to run marketing differently. They have different goals. They have different frameworks. They have different go-to-market strategies. I just want to understand what else is out there, because I think, I mean, we should always be learning and applying new things to the things that we do on a regular basis. So I agree. I think like, I mean, we might get to a point where I interview somebody who works at Atlassian or somebody who works at Salesforce, and they actually might say like, yeah, you know, I just create a pitch deck and I send a video out to my team and that's all they need. Chris was saying that at Gong, like for their tier two launches, they literally just like record a video and they'll just like communicate it out to the team, but they don't necessarily need like a ton of information or a ton of like assets to go and do that.
Yeah. So this is a good plug to keep listening to this podcast. Subscribe right now to the podcast so you can get it. So if you're not a smaller company, like I gave you my formula, right, for a smaller company doing positioning. And I think that works relatively, I think it works, I'm not going to say universally, but for most small, you know, companies. But yeah, stay subscribed. And when you find some guests from some bigger companies, I'd be interested in learning about that too. Because I'm sure there's also things that like they're doing. I'm like, oh man, I need that. Like that's what I should be using, even though I have a different business model or smaller company, whatever, I should be doing that too, right? So that's part of it. Subscribe right now to this podcast if you haven't already.
Yeah, plug aside, let's continue going a little bit. All right, so what would you say was the biggest challenge going into the Privy email launch?
Honestly, I think the biggest challenge we had was simplifying this story and then just telling it. I kind of talked about this before, but like basically, like I said, the strategy was we invest in this product. We knew we wanted to grow this product. We spent a lot of time, engineering time, building it out. And there wasn't like this one thing that we wanted to talk about. And so this is where like the idea of like marketing, product marketing in particular, coming in and being able to like add an angle to it, like a competitive campaign. Like that was like probably the biggest challenge, was figuring out, okay, we want to focus on a competitive campaign. Like that's our model. And then after that, or that's our approach to this launch. And then after that, it was like, let's stay disciplined and let's remain focused on that objective and that messaging again and again and again in preparation for the launch. So I would say that was probably the biggest thing, was just staying focused and making sure that we had our eyesight on the right competitor and how we wanted to do that. And then repeating that message again and again and making sure that we're using that across the board in all of our launch assets.
So how would you actually recommend that a product marketer listening to this podcast would go and, you know, overcome some of those same challenges?
Yeah. So like the biggest thing is like, start with like, we did this at Driftwood, just meet with your product team every month. It doesn't have to be about a specific, like you don't have to have like, this is the thing we're launching. Just meet and talk every month and understand what they're building and what customer problems they're trying to solve. Those two things, what they're building and what customer problems they're trying to solve. Just understand those things. And that's going to help you understand and think about launches, because you can fabricate your own launch with some of the stuff that's new and built, and you can compile it and make it into a launch, right? And so when you're doing that, create a launch goal, right? So like we had to, with Privy Email, we had to have a goal. There's so many different things we could do. We could try to get, you know, existing customers to, you know, use the product more. We could try to get, you know, less churn for that product SKU, or reduce churn for that product SKU. We could try to do lead acquisition. We could try to do expansion MRR, right? And this is a bunch of different things. Ultimately, we realized like the goal was to grow the SKU. And so that's a lead gen exercise. That's a get more people on top of the funnel, get them in, get them talking to our sales team, or get them to buy on their own, because you can do either depending on, you know, what type of, how big you are. That was ultimately our goal. And so like we focused 100% on that. And basically the other things were like important and good, but like we just said, this is our goal, is to grow, you know, we had a number and everything for the month. Like this is our number to grow, and that's what we focus on. And then that's what helped us put together all the other activities and the things we ended up doing for the launch. It just makes it much more clear. This is the thing we're trying to do. So we're going to do X, Y, Z, you know, to accomplish that goal.
Yeah. I think you touched on one thing too, I think I'm going to be hearing in a lot of these interviews that I have with product marketers and go-to-market leaders. It's, you always need to come back to the problem that you're solving for your customer. That's going to help, you know, define your business goals. It's going to help define your positioning. It's going to help rally everybody around that one problem and how your company solves that problem. It's kind of like the foundation for everything that you do from a go-to-market perspective.
Exactly. And the launch goal is like the thing you put in your internal training, you put in your original pitch deck to your, you know, management team. It's like, that's, and it's on the wiki, however you're organizing your launch. That's like the front and center. This is the thing that we're trying to accomplish with this launch.
Right. So what would be one piece of advice for somebody who's going to be leading their next launch or their first launch? How would you recommend that they approach their go-to-market?
Well, you need a framework. You need a system. You need a process. There's different ways of doing that. Like, you know, you can go find and get someone's framework. That's what I've been doing. You know, I put together this course, to the Product Launch Masterclass, so that I can give people my framework that I've been using for, you know, 60 plus product launches. Now you obviously have a framework. Our frameworks are very similar. You helped me build mine. So like you need some sort of system and process, and you need a starting place. The other way of doing it is you can do it on your own And the more experience you get with launches, the better. Like the only way I was able to come up with my own framework that I know it works is because I did it 60 times, right? Like the same thing for you, 76 times, whatever launches. You need to have like a system. You need to have a process you can repeat, especially if you're going to do a lot of launches, if your company like has the appetite for that, you have like the product development and you think that can be part of your marketing motion, you need a process you can repeat again and again and again so that you can hit the goals, you can organize, you get the team excited, you can plan it out appropriately. And so you can like keep yourself from going insane and make the launch actually manageable, right? So you need some sort of system. Hopefully you get some stuff from podcasts like this, right? Of like different frameworks and stuff that you can take and start using for your launches. And then it's experience, man. It's getting out there. It's doing it. It's talking to product marketers, learning as much as you can. The thing is, like, again, I've been listening to a lot more product launch content, like a podcast this morning, another one, and they were talking about their system and their process a little bit. And like, it's all the same. I mean, it's all the same challenges and like stuff. So like, that's why I think having good frameworks that like know how to approach those challenges and know how to like how to organize them is really useful, but you can build your own too, you know, and by doing it and getting experience. And even if you do take someone else's framework in their system, you're going to add to it. You're going to change it. You're going to do it your own way.
Right. You're going to make it fit your company and what you're trying to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Dan, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much. I know this is going to be super valuable to a bunch of people listening and appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been awesome.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Getting to Market. If you like today's show, hit the subscribe button and tune in every Thursday to hear from more marketing pros on how they run their product launches. I'll see you on the next episode.